You are watching Kind of Funny Games Daily for Thursday, 14th of October, 2021. It's me, your host, Tamor, and I'm joined by the Young King, the Future Class, the Slightly Sick, Blessing Adeoye Jr.
I am slightly sick. It's funny because when I joined, I hit up Tim this morning, and I shared with him a voice file just to check and see how I sound, because it's hard to gauge how you sound. Because for me, when I listen to myself, when I hear my own voice as I'm talking, I'm like, wow, I sound terrible. There's no way. Like I can show up to work like this. But I sent it to him. I was like, hey, let me get like your perspective. Like, do I sound terrible? And he's like, no, you sound fine. Fine. But if you want to take off, you can take off. And I was like, no, because I feel good. If I sound good enough to be on shows, then I'm totally I want to be on shows, because like I'm healthy. I feel good. Like, I'm not, like, you know, I'm not congested or anything. It's legitimately just the lost voice, which is fucking me up.
Best thing, fun fact, do you know why you sound weird to yourself when you hear yourself?
Is it vibrations? Is it the vibrations?
Yes, because when you hear yourself, you hear it through the vibrations of your cranium. And when you hear it externally, that's eliminated. So it doesn't sound like you. That was a fun fact. A few more fun facts that, as you know, I like to try and bring some extra information to the Kind of Funny Games Dailies, and usually focusing it on around the day itself. So we're going to do October 14th, which it was an important date in 1926 because A.A. Milne first published Winnie the Pooh. You know Winnie the Pooh? Whoa. Kingdom Hearts character, Winnie the Pooh. Captain Chuck Yeager flew a Bell X-1 rocket-powered and experimental aircraft, the Glamorous Glennis, faster than the speed of sound over the high desert of Southern California. Big up. That was in 1947. 1964, Martin Luther King Jr. received the Nobel Peace Prize for striving to end racial inequality through nonviolence. Shout out to him.
Love that.
In the year 2000... the number one hit on October 14th was 2000 was Christina Aguilera, Come on Over Baby, in brackets, All I Want Is You, which is a pretty good song. It's a pretty good song.
I love Christina. Your pronunciation of Aguilera, because usually I say Aguilera, but Aguilera sounds more
Aguilera. Yeah. Aguilera. There's a character called Aguilar in something in video games, isn't there? And it just reminds me of that.
That sounds like a Final Fantasy character.
Yeah, it does. And then in 2007, the reality TV show series Keeping Up with the Kardashians premiered. The show's huge popularity helped make various family members major celebrities, notably Kim Kardashian. And what I would say is that's not what made her famous. We all know what made her famous.
Yeah, I was going to say, are we crediting? I'm down to credit Keeping Up with the Kardashians if we're trying to sweep away that history.
I'm down to credit Ray J for it.
Yeah, she recently do an SNL like intro where she very much gave credit to that video.
Now I have a pitch. I shared this on Twitter a few days ago. I am obsessed with the Smith family. Will Smith, Jaden Smith, Willow Smith, all separately. I am a fan of them all. Like, I've historically always been a fan of Will Smith. Fresh Prince is one of my favorite sitcoms of all time. Favorite sitcom growing up. And I've always loved watching Will Smith movies. One of my favorite actors. Jaden Smith, really, really good music artist. Like, yeah. I've grown to really love his music over the past about 5-ish years. And Willow Smith, I've been getting really into her music this last
year. She's good.
She's actually wonderful. She released an album called Lately I Feel Everything, which is, it is alternative rock, and it is phenomenal. Her voice is fantastic. And I hit the point, or I think it was earlier this week, maybe it was last week, where I was like, man, if they put out a Keeping Up with the Smiths show, I would be obsessed with it. That sounds like a thing I would watch the hell out of that. Like, they might be my favorite celebrity family at this point.
How you feel about Jada, though?
You know, I can take her or leave her.
Yeah, she seems like she's in the background. She's doing some weird shit. Like,
I feel like she has her audience because she has her show and she has her own thing that she's doing. And so the Jada fans are out there. But for me, my frame of reference for Jada Pinkett is, at this point, it is like the what was the word they used for the cheating scandal?
Conscious uncoupling, was it that? Or something like that.
Something along those lines. Entanglements. I know her for the
entanglement. Entanglement. Yeah.
That is what I think of when I think of Jada. Where for Will Smith, I still think of his movies. But like that adds like, imagine if Keeping Up with the Smiths was on TV when the whole entanglement situation was going on. That would have been peak TV.
Yeah, that would have been massive.
It would have been massive, though, if there was a reality show following them.
Well, if we have any reality show producers watching, just hit up Blessing. He'll give you the lowdown. He's got a pitch ready. Obviously, Kinda Funny will be requiring a small cut. And by small cut, we're talking like maybe 80%. Keep the wheels churning. So let us know. Hit us up, producers. Today's stories for Kinda Funny Games Daily include the Switch OLED sales, Metroid Dread's highs and lows. We've got a couple of stories here for Metroid Dread. Epic Games investing in LeBron James.
Whoa.
Interesting. And more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/Kinda Funny Games. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong, which is absolutely not going to happen, by going to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Don't even start typing it into your URL. It's not going to happen. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames or roosterteeth.com, or you can listen on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. You can also use the Epic Creator code Kinda Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases, like if you're playing Rocket League or Fortnite, which you know most of you are, and that helps out Kinda Funny too. To be part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free, along with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping, I mean, one time let it be a bad game of sweeping. There's a new episode of The Blessing Show up right now. 10 minutes of time loop talk. I've seen a bit of it and it's very good. I've got it watched later bookmarked.
Hell yeah.
It's a good strong start. Blessing goes through each of the big time loop games that have been released in this year and determines which one is definitively the best. And when Blessing does stuff definitively, he does it definitively. It's going to be the end all be all conversation. The conversation is over after this.
Everybody, go check that one out. Roger worked his ass off on that one. He has some bits in there that I think are just phenomenal. Like, he sent me over the first draft of it. I was like, dude, how in the world are you so creative with how you go about these things? And the concept for the video, I think both of us are very happy about. And so go over there, check it out. There's Deathloop talk. There's 12 Minutes talk. There's Returnal talk. All the big games of this year that you care about in relation to time loops, we are having. I'm diving deep into. I'm talking about them. So go check that. Go check out that video.
Another exciting and great video that you should check out is the first episode of the Arkham Files with Barrett, which premiered yesterday on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. First episode is all about the first game in the series, Arkham Asylum, and Barrett posits that it's still a masterpiece and a masterclass in design to this day, which I agree with. Some really strong case put forward in that video, so you should check it out. Episode 2 premieres on Monday, October 18th, and it is all about how Arkham City truly makes you feel like Batman. Arkham City, in my opinion, the best of the bunch. And to celebrate Arkham City's 10th anniversary on the 18th, Barrett and Mike are streaming the entire game all day, starting after Games Daily, right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. Is going to be awesome. Thank you to our Patreon producers this week, which are Pranksy and Blackjack. And today we're brought to you by Purple Mattress, Demon Slayer, and Raycon. But we'll tell you more about that later on. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It is time for some bloody news. We have 5 stories today.
Baker's Dozen!
I lied. We only have 4.
Excellent.
Do we have 5?
I went back and double checked. One of them wasn't bolded. Yeah.
Okay. My bad. I did remove a story, then add a story, remove a story, add a story. Because I was up at 3 a.m. because I live a jet lag life. So I was like keeping an eye on things. Yeah. And then from about like 8, 7, I was like working intensely. So I didn't see what might have happened. So I had to like keep moving things.
If you went out on Friday night last week, We would have gotten rid of that. We would have gotten rid of that.
Like the mind and the soul was willing, but the flesh was squishy and unable. Yeah,
missed out, Tim. Tim, my favorite comment from you, because this is during Friday night where we were doing the Resident Evil 8 stream, and we were talking about going out. And one of the things Tim mentioned was, "Man, Kevin." I forget how we described it, but it was like Kevin, Paula, and a third lady and Blessing going out to get drinks sounds
like, Kevin. Yeah, it's like Kevin. Kevin was like, "I've got two ladies ready," and I was like, "What?"
Yeah, and like you described it as being a weird night, but like it was fantastic. I wish you were there because it was a fun. It was actually
did you actually go out?
That's why we actually went out.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, we had martinis. I respect that. It was great.
Holy shit. Where did
we
you
had
go?
To, like we had to go to like three different spots before we landed at
this the is one. What I'm saying. This is what I'm saying. Like I would have been after spot one, I'd have been on the floor, face full of concrete.
But spot two and three were really close together. It was one of those things where it wasn't too much.
All right. The first story comes to us by way of Bloomberg's Takashi Mochizuki, and it is the new Nintendo Switch Japan debut bodes ill for sales. I'm going to say story is very, like, interesting. I don't know if it bodes ill, maybe slightly jazzing up the headline there, but, you know, I respect it. Mm. Nintendo's pricier new Switch console made a weak debut at home in Japan, despite pre-orders selling out in a matter of minutes everywhere in the nation. A surprising result likely due to low-level supply stemming from component shortages. The hybrid handheld's OLED edition released globally on Friday for $350, sold 138,409 units in the domestic market over its launch weekend, sales tracker Famitsu said on Thursday. That compares with the original Switch's inaugural weekend sales of 330,637 units in 2017 and the Switch Lite's 177,936 units in 2019. That was a lot of numbers, but basically the long and short of it is the OLED Switch hasn't sold as much in its first week on sale in Japan as the original Switch did or the Switch Lite did. And that partly is posited by analysts and Bloomberg is because of the shortages of components and availability of that. Going back to Bloomberg, the instant popularity of the new Switch is causing a pair of inventory problems for the Kyoto-based company. On the one hand, the company is finding it tough to produce enough Switch OLED units to satisfy demand, with Japanese retailers implementing lottery draws to determine who gets to buy one. That includes Nintendo's own flagship store in the trendy Shibuya district of Tokyo. If you go to Nintendo, you cannot buy a Switch. Instead, you get basically a chance at buying a Switch. And the thin availability of the new device is set to extend at least until early next year, according to an official at a major Japanese retailer who asked not to be named because they're not authorized to speak publicly. Production is split between the new Switch, the long-established $300 original model and the $200 handheld only Switch Lite, indicating the company doesn't anticipate OLED edition to outsell the others by a large margin. So basically, it's not doing too great, but there are a number of mitigating factors to it. My question, and they're not intending to do a price cut. My question to you, Blessing, is this a surprise? And what do you think this means for if that 4K Switch exists? Do you reckon Nintendo is like, well, we got to push that one out because we need to make our money back on this one? Or is it just a case of, do you think that train will keep rolling?
This is very fascinating because this is the opposite of the news story that we talked about yesterday with the Switch OLED. Because the story yesterday was about the UK launch being significantly bigger than the Switch Lite launch in the UK. And so, like, to get these numbers in Japan, I think, you know, this all very much points to supply and where we're at in terms of chips and shortages and all that. Regarding the 4K Switch, I think Nintendo, the way that Nintendo operates with this stuff very much is, you know, they kind of go with the flow and they go with the numbers. And as long as they're seeing sustained sales, you know, they're pretty good at riding that wave. You know, I look at something like Mario Kart, right? And how we haven't seen a new Mario Kart in ages. Yeah. And how, for me, I don't expect to see a new Mario Kart announced anytime soon. Because Mario Kart 8 Deluxe continues to sell like hotcakes. Like, people still show up and buy that game. And because that game isn't dropping in sales, they're not going to launch a new one. I kind of see a similar thing here where as long as the OLED is sustaining, I don't expect to see a Switch, quote-unquote Pro, a 4K Switch, for at least another year. You know, I think the demand for Switch Pro, a demand for any kind of Switch is kind of there. You know, the Switch is a popular enough console to where Nintendo can release any kind of Switch, and I think people will show up for it, and it's going to sell, and it's going to be good because it is the Switch, and they have a loyal enough audience that is going to show up for whatever version of the console they're going to drop. A 4K Switch, I think the demand is there mainly because people want a Switch that can look nicer on the TV. People want a Switch that can be, you know, not necessarily comparable to the PS5 and Xbox Series X, but something that you can plug into your TV and look at and go, oh, this is hot. Like, this looks crisp. This looks nice. I think people want that resolution. But with where shortages are at, I don't expect to see that until at the very least a year from now.
Yeah, I it will be interesting to see what happens to the sales of these consoles as the kind of component shortages starts to ease off. We don't know how that is, but I imagine that once that, you know, it eases off a bit and they're a little more available, the OLED models adoption rate is going to skyrocket. Yeah. But for now, it seems like the other two iterations are kind of what are keep things chugging along. But together, like you said, like they will maintain until they need to, which is, I guess it could be a lot worse for Nintendo. But it also does speak to the idea that many people may feel that it's not a significant enough upgrade for them to really even jump on board and get involved with. So yeah, we'll see how that plays out.
And I think the place where the OLED Switch comes in puts it in an interesting place because, you know, this Bloomberg article presents the, you know, original Switch sales in 2017, which of course the OLED nor the Switch Lite are going to reach the height of those because it's a new console. There's new hype. There's a Zelda, Mario, Splatoon, all these things that are feeding into that, which is going to lead to that console selling way more. But then the Switch Lite being the cheaper unit, which I think there's a lot more explicit reason for an audience to want to double dip on something like a Switch Lite than the OLED. The fact that the OLED is still doing as good as it is doing, with it being, I feel like, less of a must buy than the other two Switch models so far, I think puts it in a very good place because, you know, for me, I wasn't even looking forward to buying the OLED Switch. But as soon as it came out, and as soon as, you know, me and Kevin went hung out on Friday and I picked up his Switch OLED, I was like, shoot, maybe I do need to get one of these because this thing looks nice. And you're seeing enough of the hardcore Nintendo audience show up for this thing because it is launching alongside something like Metroid Dread, and you are going to have games like Pokemon Brilliant Diamond and Pearl, and you're going to have Pokemon Legends Arceus. And I think enough Switch games coming out over the horizon that are going to bring people in. And I think that's going to work in the favor of whatever the next Switch model is as well. Like when the Switch Pro comes out, let's say theoretically fall 2022 if we're lucky, maybe 2023, you know, fall 2024 if Nintendo is like, fuck you guys, guys are buying the OLED anyway. You know, if that comes out alongside a Zelda or a Mario or whatever the big Nintendo titles of the time are, I think that's going to bode well for that, how that console sells as well. Like, I think it very much is determined by the temperature of the year and the software, and I think people are going to show up for it regardless.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, one of the games that people want to show up for to the Switch that is available now is Metroid Dread. And if our next story is any indication, Dread is doing extremely well. The story comes from VGC, the homie Andy Robinson, who has written up, Dread has already outsold nearly every Metroid game in Japan, which is some you absolutely love to see it news. Metroid Dread has enjoyed a strong first week in Japan and already outsold nearly every other installment in the region in its opening few days. That's according to the latest Japanese sales data collated by Famitsu, which shows that Dread sold some 86,798 copies during its first 3 days on sale, making it the best-selling game for the week ended October 10th. According to the website Game Data Library, which collates Japanese sales data since 1995, Dread smashes the first week sales record for every installment released during this period. Data for the first three Metroid games is not included. The data also suggests that in just 3 days, Dread has outsold the lifetime sales of nearly every Metroid game in Japan, excluding Fusion, which was 2003, Hunters 2006, and the original Metroid. The data for Super Metroid and Metroid 2 isn't available, unfortunately. Because the Famitsu sales data only includes physical sales, Dread's first week sales will have been even higher when digital is taken into account, which is really cool considering Nintendo basically like shoved this franchise into a closet for a real long time and people were desperate for it. And the big, you know, discussion was always like, people love Metroid, and fans always wanted it and were willing to support it, but it seemed like Nintendo wasn't confident in that. And now that it's out there, it looks like people are showing up for it. How do you feel about that? And what do you think it means for the future of the franchise?
For the future of the franchise, I think it means really good things. You know, we already know that Metroid Prime 4 is coming someday. You know, there have been reports about Metroid Prime trilogy, and I think the you know, back-to-back effect that the release of Metroid Dread, a Prime trilogy, and a Prime 4 is going to have for the franchise is going to be absolutely huge. These numbers are really impressive. I think it's a given that a launch of a big Nintendo franchise on the Switch is going to be the one of the best selling of those franchises, right? I think that's what history has pointed to when you look at Pokemon, when you look at Animal Crossing, when you look at Mario, when you look at all the other Switch games that have launched. The Switch has been the shining platform in terms of, hey, we are releasing some of the most key and best versions of these games on this platform. And you know, I think Metroid Dread is just another one in that story. You know, seeing the critical reception of it, seeing how much people love it, and now looking at the numbers, the fact that the first few days of Metroid Dread have outsold the lifetime sales of a lot of other Metroid games, and it seems like all the other Metroid games, that is wild. That is very impressive. And like for me, like I've been playing a lot of Metroid Dread. I haven't gotten to talk about it on shows yet, but historically, I'm not really a Metroid person. You know, I've tried out the original, I've tried out Super, I've tried out the first Prime game, and Metroid just hasn't necessarily ever been the franchise that I personally gravitate to. And Metroid Dread has been one that has really been converting me into, oh, I get it. Like I understand what's so dope about Metroid, right? I understand that feeling of being powered up, you know, toward the latter half of the game and having all the abilities and feeling like a badass. Like there, every time I'm at the point of the game now where every time I unlock a new ability, whenever I test it out, I'm like, God, this is so cool. Like Samus is such a cool character. And like, of course, the story stuff, having not played like all of the Metroid stories up to this point, the story stuff goes way over my head, and I'm just like, you know what, whatever, this seems cool, but I'm here for the exploration, all that stuff. You know, it blows me away, and it even more so blows me away to see how much they still stick to the traditional Metroid formula and are still able to have a new audience come in and have sales in this way. Because one of the things I've been noticing and talking about on Twitter and other places is like, man, this game, I'm so lost half the time while playing this game, which I know is Metroid, right? Like that is Metroidvania. You're supposed to be lost. You're supposed to explore. You're supposed to do all these things. But I'm surprised by the extent to which they are willing to be like, no, we're not going to handhold you. We are going to allow you to like explore. And, you know, for me, there have been multiple instances where I'm like lost for hours on end, and then I realized that the solution that I was looking for was shooting a wall, and I'm like, oh. And like, you know, personally, I'm like, I don't love that, but the fact that they're sticking to that traditional Metroid formula and are seeing success in that, like, that is, for me, that very much is like a good for them. Like, you guys really found something here that is working, and the fact that it is selling well, and that means you're going to see more Metroid, I think is really cool and really awesome.
Yeah, so we already have Metroid Prime 4 in development coming in the pipeline, and obviously there have been rumors about the Prime trilogy coming back to in some form on the Switch. My hope is that the success of this kind of entices Nintendo to create in like a dual path for the franchise, and having the 2D games kind of exist alongside the 3D Prime-like franchise. I would love to see them go back and either remake Zero Mission or Fusion in this style, or even come up with a brand new game in the franchise to carry on the 2D lineage while also working on the Prime kind of path of the franchise. But we'll see whether that happens or not. I certainly hope it does, and people are definitely giving them the reason to reassess how much they put into Metroid as a franchise, given the sales performance. The next story, if that was the soaring high of Metroid Dread, we have the crushing low coming up now for Metroid Dread. And this comes from the video game website Vandal. Fran G. Matas writes about this. Vandal being a Spanish website, And it pertains to developer of Metroid Prime, Metroid Dread, Mercury Steam, which is a Madrid-based developer. And the news story is Metroid devs are not getting proper credit for their work on the game. So this is reading from a translation of the Spanish article. So if there's any strange wording, apologies. It's the Google Translate kicking in. Despite being produced by Yoshio Sakamoto, creator of the saga, development has been commissioned on Metroid Dread by studio Mercury Steam. Several former employees accuse a Spanish company responsible for titles such as Castlevania Lords of Shadow and Space Lords of not having accredited their work in the credit titles, thus preventing them from demonstrating their contribution to the Spanish title best valued by the specialized critics of all times. So basically a bunch of people have worked on the game and are not credited on it and can no longer point to it and say like, hey, I worked on Metroid Dread. I would sincerely like to congratulate the Metroid Dread team for putting out such an exceptional game. I'm not surprised by the quality of the game, as the amount of talent on that team was through the roof. One person, Roberto Magias, I think that is, who's a 3D artist, wrote on LinkedIn. I know firsthand because despite not being in the game's credits, I was part of the team for about 8 months. The developer assures that in the final version of the title, he has detected some of the elements which he worked on. When playing, I have recognized quite a few models and environments which I worked on. So my work is there. So I would like to ask Mercury Steam, why am I not appearing in the game's credits? Is it some kind of mistake? And it isn't a mistake because Vandal did contact the team at Mercury Steam. And weirdly, they have a clause which is like, regarding the clause mentioned by the Mercury Steam representative, 25% of, you have to have worked on it for 25% of the time it was in development, which is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
The 3D artist points out that people roughly mentioned that it has been 3 years of production. Therefore, he would not have reached 25% of development time required by the studio. I spent 8 months working there, so I don't get to the nine. So that's not 25%. Another different source who prefers not to say their name to avoid problems, who worked at Mercury Steam and was involved in the development, says by email that he was working on the game for more than 11 months and does not appear in the credits of Metroid Dread. As some people also say, like, the game was in development for 4 years instead of 3 years, which would elongate the time you would need to have been involved to hit that 25% mark. So really, really messed up. And also there's some other stuff happening at Mercury Steam, which is really weird as well. Roberto Magias also says that a non-appearance in the credit may be related to his departure from the company. Mercury Steam includes a clause in the contract in which it requires a notice period of 42 working days.
Wow.
When they told me this, I investigated a little and I discovered that workers' statute establishes 15 working days as a minimum notice. So that also will impact, kind of like, if people are having to give 42 working days of notice, that could, you know, impact how long the 25% as well. And also, that's just a really awful, awful clause to have in a contract.
Yeah.
Apparently, yeah. So how do you feel about that? And it kind of like, it does suck to hear that as just a dampener on what is otherwise an amazing game. And you would hope that Nintendo would step in to some degree and be like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah, this is pretty wild. Like, this is it's wild too that this isn't the first of this type of story we've had even in the last month or so, you know, the video games industry. Like, I think this is it's a recurring trend in terms of not crediting people who have worked on games because either they weren't there for shipping it or they were only there for a 9 months to a year, which is a pretty sizable portion, you know, to be working on a game for that long. You know, I think after a year, you deserve to have your name on the credits. Even after a few months, if your work is appearing in that game, you know, that is important because, you know, people take that stuff. People take their credit, their work on things, and they use that to apply to other places, right? They use that to make the case for, hey, I did art for X, Y, and Z game. Let me come work at BioWare. Let me come work at Blizzard. Let me come work at whatever X company. To not have their work credit, to have their work appear in the game and not have that work credited is taking away that opportunity from them, right? Them being able to say, hey, look at this. This is proof that I worked on this thing. This is my work history. That that sucks. And then also this, the clause of having to have a notice period of 42 working days. That is, I've never heard of anything like that before.
That's wild.
I didn't know that was a thing. That blows my mind, and that cannot be okay. That is a shocking thing. The solution here, I would think, is, you know, we always talk about unionization and how important that is for the video games industry. So I would say, yeah, like, that is their first step. But then also, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if a Nintendo or somebody would step in and be like, hey, this isn't okay. Like, if you continue to do this, we can't continue to work with you in this way. Because that is crazy to me.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm on the extreme end of the case where I'm like, if you had any sort of contribution to that game to help it go from idea to fruition, like, you should be credited to it. Like, yeah. doesn't matter, like, because you contributed to bringing that thing to life. And if you're going forward into another place where you're going to use those same skills to try and get a job working on another game, you need to be able to point to that and say, hey, this is something that, you know, I have done before, and you can see it because here's my work. But if they can't look at it and say, here's my work because you're not listed, that sucks. It doesn't matter how long, like, 25% is bullshit. I think I would put it at 1%. If you're working on it and you give a 1% contribution to that game, you should be credited for it. That is exactly what needs to happen. It's like, it is unacceptable that they think that you need to hit a threshold because let's say that 1% was coming up with some key design idea that changes the entire game. Let's say that 1%, let's say you work for 10%, but you came up with the idea for the Emmys. Like, yeah. And you're not credited. That sucks. That's awful. Let's say that you work 23% and your design is Samus's new suit. That is awful. Like, that is, I mean, obviously, like, this is an extreme end of it, but, like, you know, and multiple people contribute to it, but, like, if you're being removed from being able to claim and point to your work because you're not hitting an arbitrary number set by a company, that's ridiculous. It's unacceptable. And obviously it's going to have an ongoing impact on the kind of perception around that studio now and that game, and it's going to have a knock-on effect on Nintendo, who are now going to be having to run kind of defense on this game because of choices taken by this company. Like, if I was at that studio, I would be doing everything in my power not to screw up the bag. When you know, if someone hands you Metroid, and the moment I'm handed Metroid, I'm like, we need to make sure there's nothing going on in this studio that at any point in time someone can say this sucked. Because we are about to take one of the biggest franchises in the world, and we're about to make a new game. We can do it good, and this is going to be massive for us. So, like, we don't want that, you know, well being polluted by some poison that someone drops in. And this is exactly what's happening. Like,
yeah, especially coming off of the last news story, we're talking about how good that Metroid game is doing. And yeah. You're talking about your hopes for the future of the franchise, right? Like, I'm right there with you where I love that Nintendo does the thing where they are like, hey, we have Mario. Let's put out a 3D Mario. Let's put out a 2D Mario. Let's put out a Mario Maker. Let's put out a Mario Party. Let's put out a Mario Kart, and finding different ways to give fans access points into that franchise. I would love to see Metroid do the same thing, right? And I think that is the path that they are on, especially coming off of Metroid Dread. You don't release Metroid Dread and then go, all right, cool, let's stop working with Mercury Steam and not do 2D Metroid anymore. I think you look at the success that it's having and go, oh, sweet. So next up, we got Prime Trilogy. After Prime Trilogy, let's release Prime 4. And then after that, let's do another 2D Metroid with Mercury Steam. And I think you make the great point of, don't fumble that bag. You know, don't fuck up that opportunity right now. You are in the place right now where you kind of are the golden child. You are in your moment. Like, you are releasing one of the bigger titles this year. And to come off of that with controversy and come off of that with something as dumb and simple as not crediting your workers, the people that helped make your game, you know, that is a sucky way to let that go, right? Like, that is a very arbitrary and non-problematic thing that you should have happen, right? Like, you shouldn't have to worry about this. You should just credit your workers and move on, because I'm with you that it sucks to be somebody who, even if it is the ripple effect of, hey, I was in collaborative meetings for, let's say, audio design for the game, and I worked in the audio on the audio team for 6 months, and, you know, like, I might not have directly, you know, did any specific I wasn't responsible for a specific major thing, but I did spark the idea that led to this other thing. If you're on the team, your name should be on that team, right? Like, exactly. Your name should be a part of that. And so, you know, it's a dumb thing to let go in that way.
I do Kind of Funny Games Daily once a week. You best believe I'm putting that in my Twitter, on my CV, on my LinkedIn, on my Adult Friend Finder profile. I'm putting that on my Tinder profile. I'm putting that everywhere. Yeah, Christian Mingle, Muslim Mingle, Habbo Hotel. If you find me on Ashley Madison, it's going to be on there, believe me.
Ashley Madison still a thing? Didn't they get shut down?
I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure it was like a big hack.
Yeah, I think they killed them though, right?
Did they? Man, that's wild.
It was a huge hack.
Could you imagine going back on Ashley Madison after that? Being like, hey, man, they fucked up big that one time, but I'm going, if I'm going to cheat, I'm gonna go out. That's wild.
Our next story comes from the best video game website on the internet, GameSpot.com, and is written by Eddie McCooch, who, the story being, Epic Games invests in LeBron James's company and will bring unique content to the metaverse. That's a lot of words that confuse me. LeBron James' entertainment company Spring Hill has raised more money to help fuel its ambitions, and one of the investors is Fortnite studio Epic Games. With a new round of funding, Spring Hill is valued at $725 million, according to The Hollywood Reporter. James founded the company with his longtime business partner, Maverick Carter, which is just a top 10 name. Oh, Maverick Carter? Mm-hmm. Holy crap. Turn in your badge and gun, Maverick.
That's such a great name. Reminds me of like Carter 3, too. You know, it has like that good Jay-Z, Lil Wayne.
Redbird Capital led the investment round with Nike, if you're an American. The Fenway Sports Group and Epic Games also buying in at unspecified dollar amounts. In the case of Epic, the money will help bring unique content to the metaverse, Spring Hill said. A LeBron James skin for Fortnite was released earlier this year, so James and Epic have a history of working together that they are now seemingly keen to expand upon. The money will be used to help Spring Hill expand internationally and to acquire valuable new IP, pursuing synergistic M&A and investing in emerging creators. Spring Hill's biggest release so far has been Space Jam, A New Legacy, the widely panned sequel of sorts to the Michael Jordan movie Space Jam. There you have it. LeBron James getting into games in a big way.
I mean,
how do you feel?
This is shit that goes over my head and kind of makes me roll my eyes a little bit, especially whenever I hear Epic Games talk about the metaverse and all these things. Conceptually, I understand what they're going for, and I think there is a kernel of something interesting there, you know, in terms of trying to go beyond the video game space and you know, focus on social spaces or focus on like how can we expand what we're doing in terms of how people come together digitally. There's something there, and that makes me sound like I'm fucking Mark Zuckerberg talking about how we can expand Facebook and shit. But the fact of the matter is, when you look at something like Fortnite has done a lot in terms of taking a video game and turning it into a social space. When we talk about how popular Fortnite is, so much of that goes beyond just the, hey, I want to go in with my friends and become the last person standing. So much of it is, hey, I want to hang out with my friends. Especially when you look at the last 2 years of the pandemic and people being disconnected and all these things, right? Something like Fortnite and Battle Royale games in general have been so key to creating spaces where people can come together and just hang out and do objectives and do whatever the fuck. Half the time when I'm playing Fortnite with friends, you know, even though I don't care too much about the dailies or the objectives or whatever, my friends usually are like, no, I want to go after this daily. I want to go after this weekly. I want to go after this objective. And I'm like, cool, whatever. Or let's go talk to this NPC. Let's do X, Y, and Z thing. And so for Epic to be exploring that even more so and trying to get in deals with people like LeBron James to help expand that aspect of Fortnite and their IP, good on you, I guess. You know, people love LeBron James. LeBron James is popular. You know, like Space Jam, A New Legacy was a thing, and I like that movie. And so, like, you know, if you guys are going to do a Space Jam, New Legacy tie-in in an Epic Games thing, I'm down. I'll try it out. I'll check it out. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, like, it seems like the ambition is a bit wider than that, or like bigger than that. Like, it doesn't seem like it's, because it says acquiring IPs, and like that's wild. Like, it feels like the LeBron James company is going out there to kind of create these synergy opportunities, and Fortnite is just one of them. I wouldn't be surprised if we see more of him in there, but I would be well up for a Space Jam Fortnite kind of crossover. Like that feels like it could work better than an actual new Space Jam movie did. But we'll see if that actually comes to fruition.
I'll love that.
Yeah. Our next story comes from the second best video game website on the internet, GameSpot.com. And the story is once again written by Eddie McCouge. Battlefield 2042 Hard Zone mode officially revealed, and it's not a traditional battle royale. Following many teasers and some leaks, EA and DICE have now formally announced Battlefield 2042's Hazard Zone. Jeez.
Well, the logo looks like Hard Zone.
Yeah, it does look like Hard Zone. That's why I was like,
I had to read it like three times before I actually did that. I was like, oh shit, those are Z's.
So Hazard Zone mode, and it's not a battle royale, but it also sort of is. In Hazard Zone, you play in a 4-member squad, and your objective is to retrieve data drives, locate and retrieve data drives that have fallen from satellites. You'll scour the landscape for these drives as you fight against AI combatants and other teams of humans players trying to do the same thing. Sounds like a battle royale type experience. DICE says Hazard Zone is not a battle royale mode, as the objective is not to strictly kill other players, but to escape with as many drives as possible. That means you can win without killing a single person. There are 2 time-limited extraction opportunities during the match, and the extraction points are located on different parts of the map. You and your team can opt to leave during the first extraction, which happens midway through the match, or wait until the end of the final extraction. It's riskier to wait, but you'll also have more time to collect drives, so the rewards will be greater. In any event, only 2 squads will make it out alive, or none. It supports 24 players on PS4 and Xbox One, and 32 players on PS5 and Xbox Series X and S and PC. So that will work out to 6 teams or 4 and 8 teams or 4 respectively, depending on the platform. No matter what, only 1 player on a team needs to survive. And it has a meta element too, where drives have values assigned to them, and collecting the drives gives you access to Hazard Zone's specific currency called Dark Market Credits. They had to make it complicated. They needed to add to just another, they're like, we got this idea, it's cool, we're going to add this other thing on top so no one understands anything ever again. And these credits can be spent to acquire weapons, gadgets, and upgrades. And then there's Hazard Zone uses all 7 maps from Battlefield 2042's All-Out Warfare mode. And another thing to note is that each squad cannot have more than 1 of the same specialist character. And players who are killed can be brought back into the match through a revive system that your team can purchase. There's a lot more to it, but Blessing, how you feel about that so far?
Man, I love when games have different types of currencies that I can buy into and try to have to solve and figure out what buys me what. That's my favorite thing in video games. This reminds me a lot of Hunt Showdown. Hunt Showdown I played a little bit of last year. I actually played that, I want to say, with like Greg Miller and a few other people. And, you know, I think this is an interesting direction, and I understand how they end up going this direction after Battlefield, I believe it was called Firestorm. That was their battle royale mode that they tried in the previous Battlefield game, and that just tanked. That thing did not find an audience whatsoever. And Battlefield Firestorm really came and went. And so I totally understand how they're like, all right, let's not do battle royale again per se, but what twist can we put on it to make it interesting and maybe find a mode that is able to find its own audience? And so like for that, I think this is an interesting direction, and I'm excited to kind of see how it plays out, because Battlefield in general, just as a video game, is in an interesting spot, because right now we're in the fall of the competitive first-person shooters. We are about to see the releases of Call of Duty, Battlefield, and Halo. We're coming off of things like Splitgate. We're going to have the Rainbow Six Not Quarantine come out in a few months now, which isn't competitive, but I think still falls in line of there's a lot of first-person shooters happening right now. And the thing that I think the obstacle that Battlefield is going to have to kind of get over is the fact that it is still selling itself as a premium first-person shooter in a time where Halo Infinite is on Game Pass, and Halo Infinite multiplayer is free-to-play. Call of Duty, one, is Call of Duty, but then also Call of Duty Warzone is free-to-play. Splitgate, free-to-play. So many big first-person shooters have gone free-to-play or have shifted their release strategy or sales strategy in a way that doesn't hinge on coming out and being a $70 title that you're going to have to buy in order to play with your friends who are also spending $70 on this thing. I think that is in 2021, kind of a big hill for Battlefield to try and get over. And the thing that I think is going to be key for them actually doing that successfully is establishing themselves as something that is, that truly is one quality, but then also unique. Like the other first person shooters I'll point to in terms of you know, being premium first person shooters that are able to separate themselves and justify their own prize points would be Overwatch and something like Rainbow Six Siege, which both have unique enough aspects to them and quality enough gameplay to where people are down to spend $60 on those. And I could see new version like Overwatch 2, I can easily see myself and other people spending the $60 or $50 to play that game. Same with another Rainbow Six Siege if they're to do that. A Battlefield game, I think, has to prove itself as, hey, this is an experience you can only get in Battlefield. And I think that's going to have to filter into Hazard Zone as well. Hazard Zone has to be something that feels like something you can only get in this type of experience. And if they're able to pull that off, then I think that's going to be impressive. And I think that is what they need. But I think the question is still up in the air of, are they going to be able to pull it off? And from watching and seeing people's impressions from doing I think that was the beta.
Yeah.
It seems like people are kind of split on it. I'm seeing quite a few people being you should delay this because this isn't running well, which is not the place you want to be in right now.
I'm really worried about Battlefield as a franchise. Like, I know it's got a lot of fans and it will probably be fine, but there's just enough challenges and hurdles that it needs to overcome. And it just doesn't feel like it looks like a runner running up to a hurdle and you can just tell they haven't got enough speed. You're like, you don't have the momentum that when you jump here, I don't think you're going to clear that hurdle. And like the beta looked like it had its moments. Like people were like posting videos of stuff they were doing. And I was like, okay, cool. But like overwhelmingly, the things I've seen is like an experience is like, it's a bit janky and it needs more time. And then next to that, Halo comes out and it like, you see clips of that and it's looking so fun and it's looking like relatively polished for what it is. You're like, oh man, the competition's already going to be hard for you. And then you stack up, like you said, all the numerous other experiences that are existing and already polished and good, and we'll just have more content. And you're like, ugh. And then not having that free-to-play element, like, I'm really surprised that they didn't have this be like a free-to-play version of it in the same way that Call of Duty had Warzone come out in that way. It's like this, like, take Hardzone and make it free-to-play and like just put it out there and be like, hey, this is the Battlefield experience, you know? And if you want more stuff, you want to play the campaign, you want to play this, you pay money for it. It feels like it's, again, like this feels like a make or break moment. And it's funny because I've said this about Halo as well, where I feel like Halo is also in a make or break moment where they had a few games that were like, okay, did enough to carry them over the finish line, but not amazing. And if Halo wants to recapture the glory days, this has to be big for them. And the multiplayer, and they've had some missteps with, you know, co-op not being there at campaign and some other bits and pieces not being perfect and delayed. But what they've shown so far has kind of won a lot of people over. Like a lot of people are paying attention to Halo now and it feels good and they're like excited for it. Battlefield seems to be like on the other end of the spectrum, despite being in the same position where it needs to, this is a make or break moment for it in my mind, and it's biffing it in a lot of ways. And that is worrying for me because I would love to see Battlefield continue to be a juggernaut, if only because it challenges Call of Duty, but it feels like the others are running away with it and like this franchise is falling behind, which is sad to say.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you put it well, where Halo is in a make or break place as well. But as far as I can see from the tests and from people having fun on Twitter and from the impressions that Tim, Andy, and Mike have been giving, it seems like they're making it. I see, campaign is yet to be seen, but in terms of multiplayer, it seems like they're making it. And Call of Duty, again, is Call of Duty. And so Battlefield right now, if you're to put these games in front of me, right, and went, hey, here's Call of Duty, Battlefield, Halo, and like whatever other first person shooter is out right now, I'm looking at that, and right now I'm not immediately going to Battlefield. And for you to be full price right now with that being the case, that is a tough place to be in, because it is kind of make or break for that. And I'm surprised that it isn't what you're saying. I'm surprised that Hazard Zone isn't free to play. I'm surprised there isn't some kind of free hook to get people in into that game. But hey, like we'll wait and see how Battlefield I was gonna say Battlefield 5, how Battlefield 2042 performs when it comes out.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how it goes. One thing that you do get for free is this show. But remember, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad-free if you cough up some cash on Patreon. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about today's sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Purple Mattress. Picture this. You're in bed, ready for a good night's sleep. It's hot. You're sweaty. Your neighbors are causing a ruckus. So are the cicadas who emerge from the ground after 17 years of getting ready to mate, scream, and die. Sounds peaceful, right? Wrong, unless you add a Purple Mattress into that equation. That's because only Purple Mattresses have The Grid, a fancy ventilated design that lets air flow through to keep you cool. It's also super comfy, supporting your back and legs, but cushioning you in all the right places. I can attest to this. I absolutely love the Purple The Grid pillow that I have, and it is so perfectly cool. I never need to flip it because it's both sides. It's always cool. It's always making me feel good. Purple is comfort reinvented. Right now, you can get 10% off any order of $200 or more. You go to purple.com/kindoffunny10. Use the promo code kindoffunny10. That's purple.com/kindoffunny10. Promo code kindoffunny10 for 10% off any order of $200 or more. purple.com/kindoffunny10. Promo code kindoffunny10. Next up, let's talk about Demon Slayer. It's time to become the blade that destroys demons in Demon Slayer, Kimetsu no Yaiba, The Hinokami Chronicles, launching on October 15th on PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Xbox, and Steam. Tanjiro comes home to find his family brutally murdered and his sister, Nezuko, transformed into a demon. So, Tanjiro does what anyone would do, vow to become a demon slayer to restore his sister's humanity and kill the demon that massacred his family. Duh. Based on the anime of the same name and the box office hit, the Mugen Train arc, this game's adventure mode lets you relive the most memorable moments and battles. There's also a versus mode where you can choose any combination of two characters to face off. With exhilarating gameplay and a whole bunch of skills and characters from the anime, rise up to become the strongest of the demon slayers. Pre-order Demon Slayer, Kimetsu no Yaiba, The Hinokami Chronicles to unlock two bonus characters and get early access to the game. To pre-order, go to the link in the description. Finally, shout out to Raycon. We can't control the vibes of the world around us, but with a pair of Raycon wireless earbuds, we can at least control the vibes in our heads. Cool Greg is training for a half marathon. He's been getting his run on. He's been working out using his Raycons. He's been loving them. Whether you use them to get hyped, to relax, to work, or work out, Raycons are about to be your new best friends for on-the-go audio. The new everyday earbuds look, feel, and sound even better than ever, somehow, and are still half the price of other premium audio brands. Raycons are sure to impress you before you even turn them on with their new and improved look, feel, and optimized gel tips for flawless in-ear fit. The coolest thing is their new awareness mode for when you need to listen to your surroundings instead of your jams. Right now, Kinda Funny Games daily listeners can get 15% off your first Raycon order at buyraycon.com/KFGD. That's buyraycon.com/KFGD to save 15% on Raycons. buyraycon.com/KFGD.
It'll be some time before we find out the ultimate fate of Battlefield, but if I wanted to know what's going to happen today, what's coming to Mom and Grub shops today, where would I look?
I'm going to read this in my sultry, sexy, half full voice.
This is Blessing. I need you to arouse me with this.
All right, I got you.
Remember I like Lost in the Dock. We have like three things back to back, so I was gonna read the wrong thing. You can go to the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
God damn, I'm feeling aroused. I haven't felt this in a little while. Whew.
This is like the this is the best I've ever looked, by the way, and the worst I've ever sounded. Not gonna lie, I kind of overcompensated for this episode. I made sure that my hair was done. I got my Shadow the Hedgehog chain, and I'm rocking the Halloween Cthulhu sweater.
Yeah, the Cthulhu sweater. I wanted to bring it up, but like I didn't get a chance to before the show started. Look good.
Should we carry on by like just doing out today in ASMR vibes?
I mean, we can keep doing. I mean, do you want me to read out? I can read out today.
I can try a bit. How about I do up until hair?
Okay.
Switch. How about you switch off every other word?
I'm down to switch off every other
one. Okay, let's see. Okay, I'll start with the first one. Out today, we have Doctor Who, The Edge of Reality, for PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC.
We also have Chasing Static for PC.
The Rift Breaker for PlayStation 5, PS4, Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, and PC.
Aeon Must Die for Switch.
Subnautica and Subnautica Below Zero for Switch.
Waifu Discover 2, Medieval Fantasy for Switch.
X-Tones, baby, for Switch.
A Little Golf Journey for Switch.
Oh, how about The Sundew for Switch?
This is a long list.
Yeah, let's just go. Let's just go normal
Fly
now.
Or you can read the rest. You can read the rest.
I can read the rest. Fly of the Animals, Switch. Bonito Days, Switch. Red Ronin, Switch. Zumania, Magic Castle, Magic Casual Puzzle. Sounds like a mobile-ass mobile game for Switch. Nira for Switch. The Jackbox Party Pack 8 for Switch. Ruin Raiders for Switch. Mon Amour for Switch. Aliens Drive Me Crazy for Switch. Inspector Waffles for Switch. Sounds delicious. Henchman Story for Switch. Evil Tonight for Switch. Tears of Avia for Switch. Get Together, a Co-op Adventure for PC. The Alien Cube for PC. And Stolen Realm for PC. And also, Growing Up for PC and Mac. I didn't spot any new dates or release dates or anything like that, unless you know anything that I don't, Blessing.
No, I checked my email. There's no news.
Yeah, nothing's going on. Deals of the day. Big one here. Brace yourselves. Cars 3 Driven to Win on Xbox One is $9.99 on Amazon. Ka-chow. Tetris Effect Connected is $19.49 on Oculus Quest. That's an interesting one. I might check that out. Xbox Live Gold and Xbox Game Pass Ultimate subscribers can try Halo, the Master Chief Collection, Borderlands 3, and Dirt 5 this weekend. And each game is available at a discount if you want to buy it.
Now, when I saw this in the doc, the Cars 3 thing, and I saw Ka-chow is written there, and in my head, I thought Ka-chow was the code that you would enter.
Enter Ka-chow to get yourself some.
I was very excited about that prospect. And then also, speaking of Borderland, so last week I watched Squid Game, which is a very good show. It is a fantastic show. I was actually very surprised because I knew people were talking about it. I knew people were memeing it, but I didn't realize that it was actually good. I thought people were just making fun of it. Watching it, I was like, oh, this is a phenomenal show. Good for Squid Game. But there's also another show on Netflix called Alice in Borderland.
Borderlands, yeah.
That I keep seeing pop up on my homepage, and I'm like, should I watch this? Have you seen
it? I have not seen it, but my roommate Chastity, who has seen it, has said that she prefers, she thinks Borderlands is better. So I'm excited, and I trust
her. Squid Game.
It's better than Squid Game. She enjoyed it more. No, she didn't say it was better. She said she enjoyed that more. So that's definitely one to check out. The Alice in Borderlands is high on my list just because I trust Chastity. She, you know, used to handle all of our entertainment stuff. So she knows a good thing or two. So I'm going to check that one out as well. Next up, we have Reader Mail. Now it's time for Reader Mail. You can write in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get your questions read on the show, just like Jordan Deeb. Who says, good morning and happy Tim Tam Thursdays. Sadly, it's not Tim Tam Thursdays. I mean, it is, but we got Blessing. So I don't actually have a question for any of you today's or news stories or anything current in gaming. But Tam, I need to know, where did you get those neon green Joy-Cons that are on the bottom switch of your embarrassment of switches tweet? If you could tell me where to find them, that would be great. I got those from Amazon.com. Or any retailer. I think you can get them. Like, they're just standard yellow Joy-Cons. They're not neon green. They're like a neon yellow. They're fairly common.
Are they just two yellow Joy-Cons?
They're two yellow and blue.
Because I got the yellow and blue. Right now, so like, here's the thing. Actually, where's my other Switch? I forget where I put my other Switch. I just got the Switch OLED, right? Which came with the white Joy-Cons. And
so
I think
sexy.
Oh my God, right? It looks so good.
Look at that. Oh my God.
But I want to gift my old Switch to my nephew. And I'm in a predicament because I don't know which Joy-Cons to give him. Because I have yellow and blue Joy-Cons that I like a lot as well. And I have these white ones. These are the only two pairs that I have.
Based on wear and tear, your old ones are more likely to get drift. So you got to give him those ones.
The drift ones?
Yeah. The kid's got to learn about injustice. So give him one that's on the verge of getting drift.
I do still have my first pair of Joy-Cons, which is like the two black ones that do have drift. And they're just, I'm sure they're sitting in my tub somewhere. Part of me is like, should I be the devil? Should I just give the drift ones?
No, is this your cousin? No. Did you say it's your cousin or your nephew? Nephew?
Nephew. He's like
seven. If you were a good uncle, you would buy that kid a pro controller. That's all I'm saying. If you were a good uncle and you were a responsible gamer trying to raise the next generation right, you'd buy that kid a pro controller.
Part of me is also like, do I give him the dock as well? Because the plan was to give him the dock. You know, I wanted to give him the full package.
Definitely give him the dock.
But here's the thing, Kevin. I have two docks hooked up right now. One to my monitor that's on this desk, and then the other to that TV back there.
Oh my god!
And you need them both.
And it's so easy just to go back and forth. I underestimated how good that was.
You could buy a dock that's really affordable.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot of money. It's a lot.
So here's the pitch.
It's like $70.
That's a lot of money.
Here's the pitch. Here's the issue you have. You could also be a responsible uncle by saying, I'm not giving you a dock because I want you to not take up space. I don't want you on the living room TV or this TV, that TV. So you'll be able to play this on your own. The downside is if you hand him that Switch without a dock and then give him a pro controller, he's going to be like, what level of madness is this?
Yeah, jokes aside, I'm giving him all the things, but the thought did cross my mind of like, fuck, I really like having two docks, and so I might just end up buying myself another dock.
They have the cool ones too, the little ones, that you can like put in sideways. It doesn't matter. You look it up. It's cool. It's cool options.
Yeah, the yellow Joy-Cons are, I think I just remembered, they might be related to the Splatoon release, so they might be the Splatoon docks Joy-Cons. Sorry, what are you laughing at over there?
Akron in chat says, bless is the guy who gives to charity but asks for change. It's really funny.
And then final question comes from a nanobiologist who says, hi y'all, Xbox is doing surprisingly well this generation already. It's already passed 100,000 units in less than sold in less than a quarter of the time it took the one, but specifically the Series S is doing the best out of the two. Why do you think that is? Is it a cheaper model? Do they just not care about do people just not care about the 4K 60fps like the West normally is obsessed about? Why do you think that is? I think it's just cheaper and it's cute and it's easily available.
Yeah, I think it's availability. I think that's the big thing. Right now, the things that are going to sell are the things that they're able to manufacture. And so I don't think I look at sales numbers and I think those have no bearing on the actual demand, because demand is peak. Like, people are buying what they can get their hands on. And so if Series S is selling more, that's just because there's more Series S's out there.
All right, going over to You're Wrong. We've got a couple in here that are like, Europe has a longer period for notice period, which is true, but 42 days is still pretty high.
42 working days, too.
Working days, yeah.
That's like up to 2 months,
yeah,
pretty much, like a month and a half. But like, you know, that is a long time for that kind of a notice.
We've got Doctor Who game was delayed to October 28th. Aeon Must Die. Okay, we've got Aeon Must Die is the game from the publisher that is a wrong'un, so maybe, you know, do some research before you pay for that game.
Bless, I was talking about this doc.
That is nice.
Oh, that does look really nice. Yeah. Now,
is a bunch of different companies make it.
Is this gonna fuck up my Switch? Because I remember reading, I feel like
that time's over. I think that they figured it out. Didn't mean that.
That was sick. You can also get that other dock, which is like just a mini USB thing, right? Like it was kickstarted or something.
Yeah, that
is like
really
good.
Tim,
yeah, the little
Tim
tiny
loves
one.
Loves it. This yeah. Thing, hold on. I got it.
Whoop. You get it up. You get it up, baby.
Yeah, let me see that.
Thing, yeah, right? There you go. That.
That's too much. I feel like this one's too much.
Wait,
this is going a little too hard.
You just HDMI it in out. Yeah. That's all you want. Yeah.
That's too much. I see.
Yeah.
This seems like it's doing a lot.
Yeah. I like that first one. I might pick that one up
as
well.
That first one was hot for sure.
Yeah, that was hot. Tomorrow's host. Switch.
So someone in chat. Heads up.
Tomorrow's hosts are Blessing and Janet. Is that right still?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
I think it's right. You know what? We'll see where our voice is at tomorrow.
We'll see. If you're watching live on Twitch, after this, we have the finale of the Metal Gear Solid 3 playthrough with Barrett, Mike, Kevin. Blessing, are you going to be on that? Is your voice done?
I'm gonna hang out. You know, I'm probably gonna be quiet more than usual.
Quiet, quiet is Metal Gear Solid 5.
No, you're Metal Solid 3. You're absolutely right. I do have a thing that I got sent to my front door that I can't wait to reveal on the stream. And so okay. Kevin knows what I'm talking about.
It better not be a costume for Quiet, because I don't want to see that.
Listen, she breathes through her. She breathes through her skin. I want to live that life.
If you want to catch the stream later, subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. And of course, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv Kind of Funny Games. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know to impress all your friends and all the potential sexual partners that you're going to woo. We have a Patreon post show coming up for those that are subbed at the silver level on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, laugh and grow fat.